This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Toasting Marshmallows. Toasting marshmallows. Toasting. Not lighting them on fire like some kind of barbarian. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is about Tom Sawyer and Robin Hood. We're just a few episodes away from the 100th episode of the show. Co-host Chloe and I will be answering questions from listeners. We already have some great submissions, but there is room for just one or two more. If you have anything you'd like to ask us, send that in to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. In Chapter 8 of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer by Mark Twain, Tom and his friend Joe pretend to be Robin Hood. It's a great little scene that very realistically shows how children play. Tom Sawyer and Joe Harper are out in the woods messing around, and they decide to act out a scene where Robin Hood battles with Guy of Gisborne. They take off their trousers, allowing their shirts to hang to their knees in the style of a medieval tunic. The boys use a single suspender, or brace for my English listeners, to act as a belt, and they face off with wooden swords. "Who art thou that dares hold such language?" Joe asks, playing the role of Guy. "I, indeed. I am Robin Hood, as thy caitiff carcass soon shall know," Tom answers as Robin Hood. Joe replies, "Then art thou indeed that famous outlaw? Right gladly will I dispute with thee the passes of the merry wood. Have at thee!" Mark Twain writes that they are giving their lines by the book. But what book is he referring to? It would be easy to think that some imaginary storybook or script is being referenced, but Twain is actually quoting from a real story, one which he read as a boy. Robin Hood and His Merry Foresters was first published in 1841. The author was Joseph Kundal, who published under the pen name Robert Percy. Kundal is a really interesting guy. He was not just a children's book author, but also a printer, publisher, and one of the earliest pioneers of photography. He led the way in printing books for children with illustrations and led the team that first photographed the Bayeux Tapestry, which depicts the battle that put William the Conqueror on the throne in 1066. Robin Hood and His Merry Foresters is a fantastic read. It neatly connects shorter tales so that it's easy for children to read as much or as little as they like, as well as revisit favorite sections. It's not much known today, but huge numbers of the book sold in the 19th century, as evidenced by the fact that there are plenty of old copies for sale online for relatively low prices compared to most older books, which are rarer due to limited print runs or people not bothering to take care of their copies over the years. The tales of Robin Hood clearly made an impression on Tom Sawyer and his friends because they've read it enough times to know the plot end to end and can even quote extensively from the text. Here's the story from Robin Hood and His Merry Foresters that inspired the scene in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Robin Hood and Guy of Gisborne by Joseph Kundal, from Robin Hood and His Merry Foresters. How delightful are the woods upon a summer's morn! The bright foliage of the trees now shines in its deepest verdure. The lawns and glades are clothed with luxuriant grass and sweet wild flowers, upon which the dewdrops glisten in the rising sun. The merry birds sitting upon the tender branches pour forth their morning lays, and yon lark, now soaring high toward the blue expanse of heaven, makes hill and dale re-echo with her melodious carol, all telling of the goodness of their Creator, and praising him for his wondrous works. Thus thought Robin Hood as, on a bright morning in the pleasant month of June, he wandered amid the trees of Barnsdale. He had been awakened earlier than usual from his slumbers by the loud and incessant singing of a golden thrush. He arose and rambled forth, enjoying the freshness of the morning breeze and the sweet music that was borne upon it. Many a hart darted across his path, and many a young fawn skipped playfully at his side and then bounded into the recesses of the forest. At another time, the outlaw's keen arrow would have followed them, but now he smiled at their merry gambols, and charmed with the loveliness of the scene, he rested upon his bow and contemplated with heartfelt pleasure the tranquil beauty of the morn. He continued thus, absorbed in meditation, when suddenly a distant sound broke upon the stillness of the air. The outlaw listened for a moment. "'Tis the tramp of horses," he whispered to himself, and stepping to a tree, quick as thought, he climbed amid its branches. Thence he could plainly distinguish the glitter of spearheads and bright helmets, and scarce had he secured himself from observation when several horsemen, followed by a troop of soldiers, passed within a few yards of his hiding place. In the leader, Robin Hood at once recognized his old friend, the Sheriff of Nottingham, who he had no doubt was now come with his men to seek for the traitorous butcher of Sherwood. It was not till some time after this little band had gone by that the outlaw ventured to descend the tree, and then, striking into a narrow path, he endeavored to retrace his steps to the spot where the men were dwelling. On his way, he was obliged to cross the high road, where a stranger arrested his steps.
"Hast thou seen the Sheriff of Nottingham in the forest?" he inquired.
"Aye, my good fellow, and with a fine band at his tail," replied Robin Hood.
"Art thou seeking him?"
"Not him," returned the stranger, who was a bold yeoman, dressed in a coat of the untanned skin of some wild beast, and who carried a bow in his hand and a sword and dagger at his side.
"I seek not the Sheriff, but him whom he seeks."
"And who may that be?"
said the forester, at the same time forming a pretty shrewd guess.
"A man they call Robin Hood," answered the stranger. "If thou canst show me where he is, this purse shall be thine."
And taking a well-filled leathern bag from his girdle, he rattled the contents together.
"Come with me, my friend, and thou shalt soon see Robin Hood," returned the outlaw. "But thou hast a brave bow. Wilt thou not try thy skill with me in archery?"
The stranger at once consented. Robin Hood, with his dagger, cut down the branch of a tree, and fixing it to the earth, suspended upon the top a little garland, which he entwined with the long grass. The archers took their station at the distance of 300 yards, and the stranger drew the first bow. His arrow flew past the mark far too high. The outlaw next bent his weapon and shot within an inch or two of the stick. Again the yeoman essayed, and this time his shaft flew straight and passed through the garland. But Robin Hood stepped up boldly, and drawing his arrow to the very head, shot it with such vehemence that it clave the branch into two pieces, and still flew onwards for some yards.
"Give me thy hand," cried the stranger. "Thou art the bravest bowman I've seen for many a day, and thy heart be as true as thy aim, thou art a better man than Robin Hood. What name bearest thou?"
"Nay, first tell me thine," replied Robin,
"and then, by my faith, I will answer thee."
"They call me Guy of Gisborne," rejoined the yeoman.
"I'm one of the king's rangers, and I'm sworn to take that outlawed traitor, Robin Hood."
"He's no traitor, sirrah," returned the forester angrily, "and cares as much for thee as for the beast whose skin thou wearest. I am that outlaw whom thou seekst. I am Robin Hood."
And in a moment his drawn sword was in his hand.
"That's for thee, then," cried the yeoman, striking fiercely. £500 are set upon thine head, and if I get it not, I'll lose mine own."
Robin Hood intercepted the intended blow, and fought skillfully with his fiery and more athletic antagonist, who poured down an incessant shower of strokes upon him. Once the bold outlaw fell, but recovering himself sufficiently to place a foot upon the earth, he thrust his sword at the ranger, and as he drew back to avoid it, Robin Hood sprung up, and with one sudden backhanded stroke slew poor Guy of Gisborne upon the spot. He immediately stripped off the hide from the dead man, upon whom he put his own green mantle, and then taking his unfortunate opponent's bow and arrows and bugle horn, he drew him into a thicket, and darted off swiftly to assist his men. In the meanwhile, the Sheriff of Nottingham and his attendants had pushed their way through the woods to Barnsdale, where they had been informed the outlaw was lying. The bold foresters, ever on the alert, heard the unusual sound of the tramp of armed men, and with their bugles gave notice to each other of the danger. Little John had been in pursuit of a fat doe, which he was bringing home upon his shoulders, when the warning sounded upon his ears. Concealing his booty among the underwood, he bounded through the forest to the scene of danger, where he found that Will Stutely and many of his comrades were urging their utmost speed to escape from some of the sheriff's men, and two bold foresters lying dead upon the grass. Little John's wrath was kindled. Forgetful of the imprudence of the action, he drew his bow and let fly an arrow at the cause of this mischief. But the treacherous weapon brake in his hand, and the shaft flew wide of the sheriff, but striking one of his followers, stretched him lifeless upon the turf. Left almost defenseless by the loss of his bow, Little John could make but a poor resistance to the crowd of men who instantly surrounded him. By the sheriff's order, he was bound hand and foot and tied to a young oak, receiving at the same time a promise that so soon as more of his comrades were taken, he should be with them hanged on the highest tree in Barnsdale. Just then, a loud blast from a bugle rang through the wood.
"Here comes good Guy of Gisborne," quoth the sheriff, "and by his blast I know that he hath slain that bold knave Robin Hood. Come hither, good Guy,"
he continued as the outlaw appeared, effectually concealed in the yeoman's clothing.
"What reward wilt thou have of me?"
"I must finish my work first, good Master Sheriff," replied the disguised hero. "I've slain the master, and now I must kill the knave, but 'twere cruel ere he has confessed his sins."
"Thou'rt a pretty fellow, truly, to turn father confessor," replied the sheriff. "But go, do as thou list, only be quick about it."
The outlaw stepped to the side of Little John, who had easily recognized his beloved master's voice, and pretended to listen attentively to what the poor captive might be saying. But drawing his dagger, he gently cut the cords that bound his comrade and gave him the bow and arrow that he had taken from Guy of Gisborne. Robin Hood then placed his own bugle to his lips and sounded a peculiarly shrill blast that rung in the sheriff's ears as a death knell. So well did he remember the sound. The two outlaws were quickly supported by a band of 60 foresters who had collected together, and all drew their bows at once against the intruders. A dense flight of arrows fell upon them. Those who were not too badly wounded immediately set spurs to their horses, or took to their heels in the most abrupt confusion. One poor forester, Will Stutely, they bore off with them. Robin Hood and his men pursued, and it was not till they got halfway on their road back to Nottingham that the defeated sheriff and his attendants drew rein. It's funny because Tom Sawyer is largely seen as a little punk by most of the adults around him. And he kind of is. He torments his little brother and he drives his Aunt Polly up the wall. He's not at the top of the class in his school, and he runs around with riffraff like Huck Finn. And at the same time, this kid has repeatedly read a book that demands a high level of reading skill, so much so that he's memorized it and learned how to use archaic pronouns, verbs, and vocabulary in the correct way. Here's the scene in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer that's inspired by this tale of Robin Hood. Listen to how the boys seamlessly shift between medieval language and their Missouri dialect of the mid-19th century. Just here, the blast of a toy tin trumpet came faintly down the green aisles of the forest. Tom flung off his jacket and trousers, turned a suspender into a belt, raked away some brush behind the rotten log, disclosing a rude bow and arrow, a lath sword, and a tin trumpet, and in a moment had seized these things and bounded away, bare-legged with fluttering shirt. He presently halted under a great elm, blew an answering blast, and then began to tiptoe and look warily out, this way and that. He said cautiously, to an imaginary company,
"Hold, my merry man! Keep hid till I blow!"
Now appeared Joe Harper, as airily clad and elaborately armed as Tom. Tom called,
"Hold! Who comes here into Sherwood Forest without my pass?"
"Guy of Gisborne wants no man's pass. Who art thou that...
"Dares to hold such language,"
said Tom, prompting, for they talked by the book from memory.
"Who art thou that dares to hold such language?"
"I, indeed, I'm Robin Hood, as thy caitiff carcass soon shall know."
"Then art thou indeed that famous outlaw?
Right gladly will I dispute with thee the passes of the merry wood. Have at thee!"
They took their lath swords, dumped their other traps on the ground, struck a fencing attitude foot to foot, and began a grave, careful combat, two up and two down. Presently Tom said,
"Now if you've got the hang, go it lively."
So they went it lively, panting and perspiring with the work. By and by Tom shouted,
"Fall! Fall! Why don't you fall?"
"I shan't. Why don't you fall yourself?
You're getting the worst of it." "Why, that ain't anything. I can't fall. That ain't the way it is in the book. The book says, 'Then with one backhanded stroke he slew poor Guy of Gisborne.' You're to turn around and let me hit you in the back."
There was no getting around the authorities. So Joe turned, received the whack, and fell.
"Now," said Joe, getting up, "you gotta let me kill you. That's fair."
"Well, I can't do that. It ain't in the book."
"Well, it's blame mean, that's all."
"Well, say, Joe, you can be Friar Tuck or Much the Miller's son and lamb me with the quarterstaff. Or I'll be the Sheriff of Nottingham and you can be Robin Hood a little while and kill me."
This was satisfactory, and so these adventures were carried out. Then Tom became Robin Hood again and was allowed by the treacherous nun to bleed his strength away through his neglected wound. And at last Joe, representing a whole tribe of weeping outlaws, dragged him sadly forth, gave his bow into his feeble hands, and Tom said,
"Where this arrow falls, there bury poor Robin Hood under the greenwood tree."
Then he shot the arrow and fell back and would have died, but he lit on a nettle and sprang up too gaily for a corpse. The boys dressed themselves, hid their accoutrements, and went off grieving that there were no outlaws anymore, and wondering what modern civilization could claim to have done to compensate for their loss. They said they would rather be outlaws a year in Sherwood Forest than President of the United States forever. If you're planning to read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer with your kids, it would be worth first reading some of the tales from Robin Hood and his Merry Foresters beforehand. These stories will really help kids understand Tom's imagination and the kind of stories that got him excited. They're also a really great way to make the point that no kid hates reading. You just have to get the right book into that kid's hands. Tom Sawyer's a rambunctious kid, and he's naughty sometimes. He cheated in Sunday school to get the reward of a new Bible. Not because he wanted the Bible, he just wanted to win. He doesn't seem to be star pupil in school, but he's obviously a kid who will read voraciously and even go so far as to create theatrical performances based on what he's read if he's just given a book he actually cares about. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer is a book that will never stop being fun to read, and that's because it's so rich and real in the way it draws on the childhood and memories of its author, Mark Twain. Robin Hood and His Merry Foresters was one of the many things that influenced Twain's writing. By taking the time to discover this old collection of tales about Robin Hood, you'll not only appreciate Tom Sawyer's adventures, but perhaps you'll be inspired to have a few of your own. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.